Welcome to the Real Estate Mogul Podcast, where you'll learn how to leverage investing strategies in your real estate business. Featuring in-depth masterminds with experts on real estate sales, investing, wealth building, and lead generation. With each episode, you'll build a toolbox of strategies for generating motivated seller leads and giving them out-of-the-box options to reach their goals while putting more money in your pocket. And now, here's your host, Tom Caffarella.
All right, and welcome everybody to the Real Estate Mogul Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Caffarella, and I am super excited to bring on Mark Ainley. Mark has fixed and flipped over 400 houses, manages over 750 rental units, and you were recently featured on TV, right?
Yes. I got off my bucket list the activity of being on TV.
What did you do? What were you featured for?
They did on CNBC, the show The Deed, they did a renovation show that along the lines of the TV show The Prophet. Marcus Lemonis, a lot of people know about that. This is kind of like the real estate version.
Okay.
And we had a troubled property that was a good story that made for good reality TV.
What was the story? Briefly, high level.
We bought and we buy properties at the judicial sale, and yep. A lot of that's sight unseen, or you can't get access to it. And we bought the wrong property. We did a due diligence on an address that the last number was flipped, and ended up buying a two flat around the across the street that was a complete mess and far further of a scope than we expected. And it was a good story because they called it the mistake by the lake. Due to lack of due diligence or us all trying to rush around to do too much in a growing company, we bought the wrong property. And the show featured us really taking the property from start to finish and getting it done. And we actually sold it, made a profit on the show. It was a good experience.
Yeah, I've never done that before. But over the course of the last 10 years, we have definitely done similar things in that we've been so busy that we overlook a lot of stuff sometimes. So over the course of the last 10 years, we've been kind of putting in, you know, processes in place to make sure that type of stuff doesn't happen. One of the things that we used to do a lot of, and we don't buy a lot at auctions, but one of the things that we used to do a lot of is we would send one person into the property and never have my partner go in who manages the construction. So it'd be somebody that had no idea about the construction, basically making a decision on a home. And then he gets in there the day after we close and he's like, oh man, this is not, you know, what I expected. So yeah, there's a lot of good things about growing, but definitely there are some growing pains as well. So tell us a little bit. You've been an investor since 2008, right?
I bought my first property in 2003. So before I got into real estate, I bought a property just, you know, when the market was hot here in Chicago, no money down type environment back in the day. I bought my first property that we really started getting into these fix and flips in 2008.
So between 2003, 2008, did you have any real estate investing activity whatsoever?
Well, that first flip was a horrible experience. So it was a horrible management experience. We actually made money on it, but it was a bad management experience. So we said, we are done with property management. And we went on a dry spell and really went back into the brokerage side of the business. And with a pretty hot market here in Chicago, we did a lot of the brokerage. And then because we worked with so many investors, it kind of forced our hand to get back into management. And here we are today, obviously managing as our primary focus.
So when you got back in 2008, was the market completely crashed at that point, or was it still kind of on the downside in Chicago?
It was starting to crash. So we got into real estate, you know, right after Lehman collapsed and all the real subprime deals really started to hit with the interest rate, that first kind of boosted interest rates on the flex mortgages. But it still went down a couple of years after, but it was pretty darn low in the areas we started to invest in. We started investing at a time right around when the Olympics were potentially going to be announced in Chicago, when we were in the Final Four for the running. And that's really was another motivator for us to start buying some of these properties at these low prices.
So you were buying them to buy and hold or to flip in 2008, 2009, 2010?
Well, the funny thing is, in 2008, that's where I really started to experience cash flow. When I got into the real estate in 2003 and 2004, it wasn't really cash flow back then. It was you buy a property, you hold it for 6 months, and you potentially make money on depreciation pretty quick. Yep. And I actually would pitch some of those type of proposals or opportunities to like experienced investors back in my early on. And they thought it was crazy. And I thought they were crazy. Like, hey, all you got to do is hold it, be upside down on rent for a couple $100 and you can make 30 grand in 6 months. And looking back, I never really knew what cash flow was until 2008. And we started looking at these properties and you start looking at the 15, 20% cash on cash returns. And that really, you know, break out the spreadsheet, and that really got me excited and into the opportunities that were about to present themselves with the market crashing.
What was the typical deal for you like then? Like, what was the purchase price? What were the renovations and what were the rents that you were getting?
So a lot of stuff we started doing in 2008 was in called C and D class type neighborhoods, where we would buy stuff for about 25 grand, put about 25, 30 grand into it, and we would rent it out for about anywhere between 1,000 and 1,200. Okay. So we were getting pretty good cash on cash. It ended up coming out to be about 20% across the board.
Yeah, that's really good cash on cash. And you talked about C and D class neighborhoods. What's your opinion on that now, looking back? I mean, was that something that you continue to do, or now are you kind of out of those type of markets?
So we do still have properties in those type of markets, and we still do manage probably about a third of our portfolio in those type of markets for other investors. It's tough. You have to, those are definitely not the neighborhoods I would tell a beginner investor to jump in with both feet and throw all their savings into, because there's a lot of challenges, and we learn a lot of challenges. Now, we're lucky that we're buying from so cheap and we had, you know, call it 50, 60 grand into them, that you can make a $5,000, $15,000 mistake and still cash flow at 12, 13%. So, they're a challenge, and they present challenges like nothing else, whether it be security or dealing with housing programs and various crime activity in the area. So definitely challenges, but there's money to be made. I read in a book back in the day, go where other people don't want to go, or go, you can make money where other people don't want to go. And that was kind of what I was thinking back in the day.
Well, I think newer investors, you know, they're looking at things on paper. They're looking at the C and D class neighborhoods versus the others. And obviously the cash flow is always going to be better there. So what type of issues did you typically have in those type of neighborhoods?
Security is one thing. If you have a vacant unit, you're exposed. All it takes is a kick in the door if you don't got your door secured right. And they could go rip out couple $100 of copper that they might go recycle, and it costs you $10,000 to put it all back in.
So you talk about 20% cash on cash on paper, right? So you look at the numbers, you're going to get 20% cash on cash, but then you talked about the net, and that ended up being, you said, what, 12 or 13%?
So the net, when we were going through, you know, if we made a mistake on something, we had to go over it, we'd end up in the low teens. But typically, our cash on cash was right around that 18 to 20%.
Okay. And so in terms of you building up your portfolio, were you buying, renovating, renting, and then refinancing out? Or how were you kind of managing cash flow on that type of stuff?
In that 2008 to 2012 span, we were going after that BRRRR model. It wasn't named BRRRR model, I guess, back then, but that buy, rehab, renovate, whatever it is, and refinance. And we were doing that. And we were able to get probably about 90 to 95% of our money out each time. So we had to leave some money in, which ended up turning into some cash flow issues for us later on as a tip there for people trying to do that.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
So if you, what was happening was we might have, I'll just use easy round numbers. If we're putting $100,000 into a property between buying it and rehabbing it, and we can only refinance out and get about, let's call it $95,000 out, that means we had to leave $5,000 into the deal. And that $5,000 had to come from somewhere. If you're doing 20, 30, 40 units in a year, that 5,000 times 20, 30 added up, where we had to then find, we had to fill that hole, which kind of forced us to start looking at selling some stuff when that started becoming realistic towards that 2012-13 area.
And that's because the appraised value wasn't coming in high enough?
Yes, the appraised value. Some banks were only allowing us to get a percentage of what we have into the deal. And so between appraisals and just banks not being as flexible coming out of that recession.
But for the most part, you were able to pull the majority of your money back out.
Yes, definitely.
Even during, I mean, you would probably, at least in your career, my career, that was the time period where it was the hardest to get money back out of any deals, right?
You know, we bought all these properties and we thought that we'd be able to go walk to any bank with free and clear properties. We kind of pooled all of our personal money together to buy these units and fix them, and thought free and clear properties, any bank will lend against it. And we quickly hit a wall where I think the first cash out we did was through some broker of a broker of a broker that put us with some hard money lender out of California who's ended up paying 12-13%, jammed us for another point at closing. So that first experience for us was pretty rough, and we learned hard on the financing, how it wasn't going to be easy. And that led us to just kind of build relationships with local banks faster.
So how would you do it differently if you were starting over?
If I was starting over, I love the Burr model. It's getting tougher and tougher to make it realistic these days, because it's hard to find the deals, I guess, that with that much of a gap between purchase price and call it ARV. But if I could start over and do it again, or how I would plan differently, I would have the exit strategy. How we went into it thinking that cash out would be no problem, and we should have had a better plan for that.
What would that plan have been?
Would have been finding maybe short-term money for a better interest rate versus, you know, the hard money we might have ended up at. Or ultimately what we did after we went to our first refinance experience, we took a package, I think, 8 or 9 properties and refinanced them, like I said, with a hard money type person. Mm-hmm. We went right for the local banks, the local community banks that were still lending, that didn't have the exposure in the recession, that weren't part of the TARP programs. And we went after them, built relationships, said, hey, you know, we have some deposits here, you know, between rents and a couple of property management accounts. We'll put those there. We just need you to lend us some money. And we built a couple of those relationships pretty quick, and we're able to start refinancing out at that 90 to 95% type cash out for us that helped our model.
Yeah, it's interesting because people always ask me all the time, well, how do you fund your deals? And there's not one funding source that I use. I mean, between private capital and hard money and commercial lines of credit and lines of credit against rental properties that we own and commercial lines of credit against my business, there's so many different ways to do it. And, you know, people complain about hard money, but if you didn't have hard money at that point, that would have been a big detriment to you, right? I mean, that was your best option as of that day, right?
Yes, correct. We were able to, because the spread was so big and the returns we were getting, hard money was still able to work and even be profitable, but it didn't come close to what we were looking at. But yeah, it was a necessary evil. And it is for a lot of real estate guys. And some guys say, I don't want to go near that. But hey, if you do it right, you plan it right, and have a way to get that hard money paid off, it could just be part of a strategy.
Now, with you using hard money, were you still cash flowing? I'm assuming that the margins were so good back then because of the prices, you were probably still cash flowing, right?
Yes, we were. It was minimal, but we weren't putting money into it, which was the we weren't making as much as we could have. But yes, correct, we were cash flowing.
Okay. And so were you also fixing and flipping properties at that point?
We ended up getting into the flipping side of things more so because we wanted to be able to cover the, call it 5-10% that we weren't able to pull out. So we'd say, all right, let's go refinance 10 properties. And to pay off that spread that we can't cash out, we'll go sell 2 properties. Mm-hmm. And we did that very non-strategic, just to fill that void at first. But then in 2012, we started to get into, you know, what a lot of people hear now is the turnkey model, where we're selling investment properties fixed up and then retaining the management. So,
yeah, I got into the business for the same exact reason. I wanted to buy and hold properties. And then, you know, in order to execute on the Burr model, you've got to get properties at a discount. So while we're marketing for these properties at a discount, we're coming across deals that we can wholesale and fix and flip. And, you know, now probably, you know, the majority, you know, the biggest percentage of our income from all of our different businesses right now is the fix and flip. I never thought I would be a fix and flip investor. Never thought I would wholesale deals or anything like that. I always wanted to get into it just for the passive income, but it's kind of by default, you've got to market for the good deals in order to get them discounting enough to execute the Burr strategy. So we've done a ton of fix and flips, probably around the same number that you've done over the course of your career. So how did that then evolve from you kind of, you know, fixing it? I mean, you buying and holding some properties and doing some fix and flips non-strategically. Where did your business go from there?
So we got into the flips really because the market presents itself, just like you said. And the ability, it became, so when we first started doing this and we're struggling to get appraisals to appraise out, some would be way off. You know, the appraisers went very conservative in that, call it 2008 to 2011 period. But the ability to, when the appraisal started to loosen up a little and reflect true market value, it created the spread of what I could buy a property for and what I could sell it, what I could get a property appraised out for. And that's starting to close up now. But that was really, it was like such a huge window. Like you said, I wasn't expecting us to get to the fix and flip model. But it just kind of presented itself, and we were able to really take advantage of that what we could buy them for versus the ARV and get to appraise out for.
Now, you said we a few times. Do you have other partners in the business, and what are their roles within the business for you?
Yes, I have. Currently, I have two partners. We all are partners in the property management, the brokerage, and the development. So we all have kind of unique roles in all three companies. On the development side, you know, I handle a lot more acquisitions and the back end marketing. I also am the managing broker for our company, so I kind of have the best experience as far as the brokerage part. And then one of our other partners, Brian, he's heads up the construction part of it. And Cliff, our third partner, he's really you know, he's our driving force. You need the guy that keeps the workers in line. And me and Brian are good at working hard to make it happen. And Cliff keeps us, you know, focused at the right spot.
I have a very, very similar setup to you. We've got the brokerage business. We've got the fix and flip business. We've got the small property management division. I also have two other partners, one of them who manages the construction and then one who manages really the operations of the business. So it's interesting that, you know, we have almost a similar setup. So tell us a little bit about where you're at today and what you're kind of looking to do over the next few years.
So we are on the development side of things. So we have the three businesses. On the development side of things, we are struggling to find deals. So acquisitions has become a more crucial role in our day-to-day. I've been sourcing other people inside between virtual assistants and you know, inside the company to help me, whether it be just find deals and through other wholesalers or just be online more looking for deals, you know, and every minute looking for the various auction deals. So acquisitions is really at our point that's going to help us continue development or kind of slow it down.
What are you doing now to find your deals?
So what I started about 2 years ago when I saw this coming was really just networking with all of the wholesalers. There's a lot of wholesalers here in the Chicago market, or it seems like there is, and I think wholesaling a lot of times becomes an easy way to get into real estate. So just kind of building the relationships with those people at the local little networking groups and chapters and all that stuff. I want those guys to come to me first when they find a deal. And I've been able to do that by just helping our reputation. Hey, if we're going to commit to a deal, we're going to close fast. Or if you bring me a deal, I'll be able to tell you in 24 hours if we can do it or not. So building those relationships and then just watching the different auction houses and stuff like that. The MLS has dried up a lot here in Chicagoland area. So we don't find too much there anymore.
The MLS is dead pretty much nationwide. I mean, the only markets that you can get good deals on the MLS anymore are really rural type areas, definitely no big cities or anything like that. So given that you're having some difficulty with that, why haven't you kind of taken control of your own marketing?
You know what? We did that for a while, whether it be the letters or the signs. Our market is flooded with that right now. You know, there's multiple signs on every phone call in our area, or every corner. There's multiple signs. So I thought our resources would be better used building the relationships with the guys that are out there putting those signs up. So because most of those guys aren't keeping those deals, they're turning them over to guys like us that are going to turn around and execute the deal actually in the end.
Makes sense. So now you talked a little bit about the fact that you've got some sort of turnkey operation. What does that look like?
You know, in 2012, we kind of got into the turnkey model on accident. We were selling a couple of properties just to kind of fill the gap of the BRRRR model we had going. But you know, through, you know, I got introduced to sites like Bigger Pockets and all that in 2000, at the end of 2012 there, and started talking to all these people, out-of-state investors. And it introduced me to a lot of these people from, it was at the West Coast and the East Coast at the time, were looking to the Midwest to buy investment properties. And I always put myself out there on places like Bigger Pockets as like a resource. Like, hey, if you want to know about Chicago, you know, I run a block by me, or if you want a neighborhood, I'll give you my opinion. And I started talking and networking with these out-of-state investors, and they were buying crap. They were buying garbage in bad areas that had half-assed rehabs, with properties that had violations, that I'm scared to go down. And I looked at where these guys were buying it from, and there's a few bigger turnkey companies in Chicago, like selling 400, 500, 600 units a year. And we kind of strategized with the partners, saying, hey, if we could just pick up these guys' crumbs and sell 40 or 50 of them a year, you know, we have a better product, we're in better neighborhoods. One thing we did from 2008 to 2000 until now is we found what neighborhoods we don't want to be in. Mm-hmm. We found the type of property we don't want to buy. You know, we used to go into any neighborhood and buy any house, and the bigger the better. And we realized that, you know, if we keep our footprint to that call it 900 to 1200 square feet, we can control our costs. We can, put a renter, the kind of medium sized renter in there, and we could control a lot more. And we were doing a lot more single family home. And we just realized that we could do this better than these other companies. And if we could just pick up their crumbs, it should be no problem. We could even do it with limited marketing, even of our service, even. And that kind of took off. So we put ourselves out there, threw our website up, started doing some networking about the whole turnkey process. And before you know it, we were, you know, the first guy came in, he bought like 27 units from us, and that kind of got us going and said, wow, there's some pretty good money here that we can do. Our original plan was to sell 3 out of every 10 units we did, and it turned quickly to that first year we sold like 7 out of every 10, and now we're probably doing about 8 out of every 10 I think we did last year. So
yeah, it's interesting because when you just look at kind of geographically how the different markets are set up, because right now you mentioned people on the West Coast and then people on the East Coast. The West Coast and East Coast right now in general in the major cities is so overpriced that it's hard to cash flow. So even us, when we're getting discounted properties in the greater Boston market, it's difficult for us to cash flow. And I know it's even worse in areas like LA and areas like San Diego and areas like that. So you've got all these people like myself who are doing really well on the fix and flip side, but they're having a difficult time, you know, buying properties to cash flow because of just how our markets are and how they kind of spike and peak and all that good stuff. So, what percentage of your clientele on that side of the business are in kind of overheated markets?
Almost all of them. Yep. So almost every turnkey buyer that we have is coming from either West Coast, East Coast. We got a couple in England and a couple in Australia, and they're all, they can't find anything there unless they're investing for appreciation. And, our demographics seem to be lean towards younger buyers too, younger investors that many of them are buying properties with us in Chicago, and they rent their home just because they can't find the right, or they don't believe in buying their own house. So it's kind of unique to see that.
So we talked about what the numbers look like in 2008 and 2009 in Chicago. What do they look like today? Somebody from Boston or somebody from LA is interested in investing in a turnkey property with you. What do the numbers typically look like?
So on a single family home, where you can kind of look at it per unit, we have a handful of 2 and 3 flats that we sell to, but usually on a unit basis, we are looking between 90 and 110,000 a unit. Mm-hmm. That's fixed up, you call it 80% of a gut rehab. Yep. Mechanicals fixed up, usually roof is taken care of, yards cleaned up. So we tend to put about, about 40 to $50,000 per unit into the units. That's one thing we learned from 2008. Is do it right the first time, where you get nickel and dimed on the maintenance side of things, and we definitely do a much extensive, thorough rehab in the last 4 years than we did in the first 4 years.
So the people that are buying them from you are roughly paying about 100.
Yeah, call it 100, and they're buying with a renter that's getting roughly 1,200, and they're looking at returns, call it between 7% and 9% right now.
7-9%. And so what are they making on a month-to-month basis? A couple hundred dollars, something like that?
Yeah, I think they're usually they come out to be about $300 to $350, I think they're making. So the taxes, one advantage of the city property you have here is taxes are fairly low. Our taxes, you hear everything messed up about Chicago, but one thing that we're good for right now, and maybe this is why at the root of the problem, but our taxes per unit only tend to be about $1,200 to $1,500 per unit per year. So you go into the collar counties of Chicago, and it's much higher than that. So
what type of tenants are you usually renting to? Is it government subsidized? Is it, you know, traditional working people? Like, what do you tend to go for, and why?
So we keep it open to both. In Cook County here, you are not able to discriminate, but we actually enjoy both sides of whether it be market tenant or a Section 8 tenant, CHA, Chicago Housing Authority. You know, we market to both. They both have their advantages and disadvantages. We were, you know, when we first started off, we were a lot more Section 8 heavy. I think in 2012, we looked at it, we were probably about 85% Section 8. Mm-hmm. And now I think we're only about 52%. And I think just the increase of maybe the economy is better and more jobs and the qualified market tenants, there's a lot more these days, it seems out there. So that's why. So we have a fairly good share of both.
Okay. That makes sense. So, and then are you managing the properties after the fact as well when people are buying them from you?
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, I think when someone's buying a turnkey property, I think the more important thing that they buy or make sure they're on the same page with this, who's going to manage it. I see a lot of guys buy turnkey around the country, and if the management can't keep the property straight or keep it occupied or keep things under control, then that pro forma that they bought in the beginning on that nice glossy brochure means nothing if it can't be managed the right way.
Makes sense. So are you doing everything from soup to nuts on the property management?
Yeah, so we are handling anything. Yeah, so our goal with our management clients is to get approvals from them if some maintenance goes over the dollar amount that we have set with them. Typically, our dollar amounts are $400 or $500 with our owners. And then we handle turnover and leasing and all that stuff. So our goal is to only get approvals from them and then send them out their statements on a monthly basis. That's the perfect world clients. That's what we go for.
So where do you see the real estate market heading in the next year to 2 years?
I ask
everybody that question because I'm always curious to see kind of what I get for feedback.
Well, you know, it's funny, and I can poke fun at myself, is for the last 4 or 5 years, I always say in the next 2 years, we're going to kind of hit a peak. And that peak has came slower than it hasn't been that we've surpassed the peak, I guess, specifically here in Chicago, which has been slower to get to that peak. But, you know, right now you have a lot of people that are getting into real estate again. You know, it's similar. I feel right now, so when I got in the market 2003, you know, that the mid-2000s, I feel for Chicago, we're in the same area where, you know, a lot of people are starting to get the real estate license, a lot of guys that are finally buying the first investment property. So the seasoned developers, you start competing with these guys that are overpaying for a property that just because they don't know what they're up against. So on the development side, I think we're losing inventory. One, to inventory is low, and there's a lot more competition, a lot more uneducated competition. And then on the broker side here, the supply is pretty low here in Chicago. So people that put their houses on the market are getting what they need, but the prices still haven't, you know, I think we're still, and this is, again, this is segmented parts of the city, but out here in the suburbs, there's parts of downtown Northside and all that stuff that have surpassed the kind of the 2007 climax. But out here in the suburbs, you know, we're still below where we were at in 2007 as far as values go, like pretty far below, like 20-30%.
So how much longer do you think we have left kind of on up this upswing, and what do you think the crash will look like this time?
Oh, man, you know what? This question is so, you know, we never knew, you know, you watch the movie Big Short. We never knew any of that stuff that was happening behind the scenes. And I sit there and I wonder when I get asked this question, like, what's happening behind the scenes that we don't know is creeping up on us. But I do know that they haven't unloaded, or they haven't been giving mortgages to everybody and their dead grandmother like they were before.
Yep.
So I don't know. I can't see it to be as sharp of a decline, I guess, this time, just because I don't know, a lot of those major things that happened before, you know, now I see what happened last time. I don't know. I just can't see it being as sharp of a decline, if anything. A plateau, I guess. And again, this market by market, I say that confidently here because we're nowhere close to where we were. But I see stuff, I know out the West Coast and all that. I get some of these wholesale deals in my email from like the West Coast, and you see like a 700 square foot single family home in Compton for like $350,000. It's like, wow, that's crazy. So I know other areas. And Midwest always has to be affected. So I don't know. We have a different generation now that's putting money into real estate. A lot of the generation, I think the younger generation, called the millennials, I guess. I'm on the tail end of that. They're not looking to depend on the 401k that their parents kind of lost money on. They're looking to kind of control their own destiny. And those are the guys that are investing in real estate. And even if they break even, they're happy because they're paying it down and they can kind of control their investment a little more. So it's a lot more of those people investing I don't know what that's going to ultimately do to us down the road. And then you still have the you know, all these REITs and funds and hedge funds that came in and bought these hundreds of thousands of units across the country. What's going to happen when those start to sell? So that's another kind of unknown factor that I'm not sure about.
Cool. All right. Well, I got a couple other questions for you. What would you say, because I think the hardest part about becoming a real estate investor is really getting started. So talk a little bit about what advice you would give to somebody who's kind of just starting out.
You know, I say this because it's easy for me. I know it's hard for a lot of people. Just do a deal. Whether it's a conservative deal that you make very little money on. Don't try hitting a home run the first time. I think you learn so much more from going through from the day you find a property to the day you find a closing and get that check in your hand, hopefully you get the check in your hand, than you do ever sitting there looking at the internet 24/7 of how to be a better investor. I think just do it. Pull the trigger.
Mm. Okay. Last question. So what would you say about mentorships or just being around other successful people?
Sphere of influence. It's all about that. You know, If you are looking to be motivated and looking to get into real estate or looking to pull the trigger, you got to be around the right people that will be pushing in the right direction, you know, a support system in a way. Especially then when you're involved in your first deal or get involved, then you have people to fall back on to help you and advise you as well too. I'm a big fan of just kind of that you are who you surround yourself with. And I think I've always surrounded myself with people a little older than me. And I think a little wise to me. I never want to be the smartest guy in the room because that means I'm not learning as much as I could be, I guess, is my thought.
Did you have a mentor when you started?
I had 15, 20 different people that I just always bothered. Whether it be, maybe they might call it annoyed, but I always ask them random questions and ask it from a different angle and so forth. But I never had one person, but if there's a lot of people out there, you know, there's guys out there now. When I first started, you'd have places like Bigger Pockets and stuff like that. Bigger Pockets, man. I mean, you go on there and you can find a mentor on there that might be across the country, but that guy will answer all the questions for you. I know I do it for some people sometimes.
Yeah, it's crazy how well connected everybody is today. I mean, literally, it's, you know, Facebook has kind of completely changed everything. I mean, you can contact somebody at anywhere in the country within seconds. Yeah, and yeah. Most people are pretty good about responding. I mean, I've never really had too many people that have really honestly blown me off. So if one of our listeners wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to learn more about cash flowing properties in the Chicago area?
We need to send me an email, mark@gcrealtyinc.com, or you can check out our website, gcrealtyinvestments.com. And then you could there's also a link on that site that links over to our property management page. So if you want to learn about our management as well too.
Cool. Can you just give me that URL one more time?
GCRealtyInvestments.com.
Awesome. Well, Mark, I want to thank you for coming on today. And this is Tom Caffarella from the Real Estate Mogul Podcast. And I will see everybody in just a couple of weeks.